Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits off-season MLB baseball podcast. Our good friend Andrew Dewhurst is here with us. How are you today, Andrew?
I'm doing well, thanks. And yourself, Chuck?
I am just fine. We are on the brink of the winter meetings, so we will definitely have a whole lot to talk about here very soon as the 118-page portfolio for the billion-dollar addition to anyone's organization is being passed around by our good friend Scott Boras about Bryce Harper and the agents trying to figure out who's going to get the biggest contract to land. I wanted to talk about some breakouts from last season and see exactly where Andrew and I stand on some of these lofty, very lofty expectations that we have from some of these players that really, really broke out this past season. Andrew, why don't you very quickly give us your Twitter handle and tell me what place you're in your fantasy hockey league or your most precious fantasy hockey league.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. I started my own analyst league this year called the Analyst Elite League, and I am currently in first place. It's a head-to-head league, and I am 8-1. So wow. Things have been going well there so far.
Yeah, that sounds like it's doing quite well. I'm getting ready to do some articles for our yearbook that we're putting together, so you guys will really have to watch for that, and I'm sure we will be plugging the second edition of the FWFB Fantasy Baseball Yearbook. We'll be plugging that here quite soon because Justin wants all of our articles and such turned in before Christmas. We went through an explosion of new analysts and new staff at FWFB, so it'll be interesting to see how the fantasy baseball exactly shakes out as far as the podcasts are concerned, which of course in January we will once again be doing team previews, that much we know, and we will go from there. The first player that I want to talk about that had a heck of a breakout season is Christian Yelich, who happens to be my daughter's favorite player in the world and her baseball crush. We've seen a meteoric rise in Christian Yelich's draft position. He went from somebody who was sort of taken in that third round, maybe late second, early third after the trade last year, to someone who is now getting taken in the top 10 to 12 picks. And I'm wondering if you can buy into Christian Yelich as a top 10 pick going into this season.
I can. The reason is I think he's extremely safe. So he's definitely a guy that you can take and not worry about it. I mean, he's played basically 145 games or more in each of the last three seasons. Like the steamer projection for him is 27 home runs, 95 runs, 85 RBIs, 15 steals, and a .296 average, which is all really you're not getting hurt there anywhere. I don't know if he's going to be the most aggressively taken player. Like, I don't think anyone's going like, I got to get Christian Yelich in the first round. But I think if you're in a spot and you're not sure who to take somewhere in that top 10, I think he's a great choice because, again, like you're not getting hurt by anything that he does. And if you can get, I mean, if steamer projections are typically not all that aggressive, so, I mean, there's reason to be optimistic for another 30 home run, 20 steal season with, a 300-ish average.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like in the profile, of course, because he does have the floor that you speak of. I just think one thing that happened for me is watching it every day last year, I kind of couldn't believe some of the things that were going exceptionally well down the stretch for Yelich. You know, he is coming off a is easily the highest batting average of his career. He also changed his batted ball profile, which many people looked sort of as a skill, because when he was in Miami, he certainly didn't want to hit a bunch of fly balls. And when you're in Milwaukee, you certainly do want to hit a bunch of fly balls. So there's something to be said for that. He's also a guy who, you know, sported a 400 OBP last year, which is obviously phenomenal. But he also sported a 373 BABIP, which he did have a 370 BABIP, and, you know, randomly has been between 336 and 370. So despite the fact that he had more ground ball tendencies when he was in Miami, he seemed to hold up pretty well as far as BABIP is concerned. This goes off one of these old things for me where after a guy is coming off a monster season, I a lot of times think that he is being purchased too aggressively, or I think you're buying just a tad bit high on the commodity. I doubt that I will own Yelich, which is a little bit surprising, I'm sure, for people to hear out there. But, you know, when you're talking about somebody who's just looked at career high in stolen bases, just destroyed his career high in home runs by 15 home runs, destroyed his career high in RBIs, although, you know, he did have triple digits before, 18 more RBIs than he had ever had before. You know, and really destroyed his runs scored. It just seems like there's a lot of things that have to go right. And maybe I'm just avoiding being a homer, but I probably wouldn't be comfortable taking Christian Yelich, or wouldn't take him until somewhere a little bit after pick 20, which, of course, in this instance means that I will not get him. The next player that I want to talk about is one of the two sort of punching bags that we're going to speak of. And that's Javi Baez, which we both have a relationship with now, of course, because I've been offered Javi Baez since you traded him in the FWFB 30-team dynasty. It's one of the pieces in which Justin Mason is trying to get Max Scherzer off of my roster. I'm just wondering openly if maybe some people should have just a little bit more optimism about Baez. I am reactionary by nature, and it seems like he has really sort of turned into a whipping post here. Do you see any reason for maybe a little bit more optimism than people are giving Javi Baez, which is kind of an odd thing to ask you when you accepted an orphan team in a brand new dynasty league, which isn't that easy to do, and already traded him. What do you think?
Well, this is my concern with Javi Baez, and it's the same. I gotta have the same concern when we talk about the other player that you're referencing. And it's, do you remember? Obviously, you remember Jonathan VR.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember the monster season Jonathan VR had. Yep. You remember all of the skepticism that came with that year, where contact rate wasn't very good. It's really BABIP inflated. How's he going to, you know, this isn't sustainable. And what happened the next year? Jonathan VR drifted into the wind after being overdrafted in the second round. Now we're seeing Javi Baez in the first round. All of the same concerns, all of the reasons to believe that what he did last year isn't for real. And here we are, right? Like 68%, 68.5% contact rate. Still a huge concern because he's not consistently making contact. Doesn't walk, which means, you know, he had 21 steals last year. You could see that almost completely evaporate. And, you know, do you believe in the 34 home runs he hit last year? I don't. I can see this all turning back into, like, this being, you know, the carriage turning back into the pumpkin, right? You're back to a 260 hitter who can't stay on the field because he doesn't make enough contact and because he's hitting the ball right at people, or he's just striking out way too often. That being said, I mean, the reason to be optimistic is he's only 26 and, you know, he did it once, so why can't he do it again? But statistically speaking, I don't think the profile looks like one where you should say, let's go and buy into this guy in the first 25 picks even, because, you know, what we have here is something that's going to work out. Like, I would love to see, and I'm sure somebody's going to do it, where they're going to take Baez in the first and get Mondesi in the second and just say, I'm putting it all on, you know, putting it all on the dream. These are two guys that are going to be, you know, that can go 20-20 and forget the underlying metrics.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, if I was going to play devil's advocate against the things that you just said, which I will go through this exercise. First thing is, I mean, when you compare him to Jonathan VR, I don't think VR was the level of a prospect that Baez was. I've seen Javi Baez make some of the worst swings that I've ever seen in Major League Baseball, you know, missing breaking pitches by 2 or 3 feet. I've definitely seen that happen. But at the same time, he's 26 years old now. He's coming off a season where he played all over the field. The Cubs are losing a middle infielder, or is certainly have one that's decidedly up in the air for off-season behavior in Addison Russell. And some of these numbers just don't look all that the results were better, but a lot of the main metrics or main things we look at don't look completely out of line with some of the things he's done in his career. You know, he had a 347 BABIP last year. Well, he had 345 the year before. He's always stolen at least double digits in bases. So that was decent. You know, in the last 3 years, his power line has gone 14, 23, 34. That seems to be an arc upward, and I don't think people really ever doubted the power potential. So, you know, I do believe that 2018 was probably, could probably be considered maybe his peak. If it wasn't for Christian Yelich going off, he may very well have, and, you know, the Brewers surpassing the Cubs and winning the division, et cetera, and so forth, it's quite possible that Javi Baez could have won the MVP last year. It's hard to imagine seeing any more negativity about a guy who has, you know, a 34 home run and a 21 stolen base season in his most recent history. So I'm a little baffled. I think this could be a situation where by the time drafting season gets here, he's become such a punching bag that maybe I actually kind of consider him a potential bargain. You know, and I do think he has to get down in that 25 to 35 pick range for me to feel that way. It's almost, I think this is a chance where maybe the hate could conceivably go too far. You know, there was a slight improvement in his K percentage last year with a slight improvement in his, or a slight decrease in his walk percentage, which was kind of hard to imagine. You know, sort of the line for him was that he had almost doubled his walk rate from 2016 to 2017. Well, he lost almost a quarter of that walk rate last year, so I kind of get it. But I just wonder if you feel like the percentage is got to be like almost 90% contact luck driven, and there really wasn't a big increase in his BABIP. So that some of the things just kind of confuse me and just sort of blur together for me. Can you see how that could be seen?
Yeah, I can. I think I just look at it and say, like, you're just taking on so much risk, right? Because, I mean, what's the adage? There's a high percentage of players taken in the first round that don't produce first three round value, right? Like, you don't want to have one of those guys. So, I mean, he was a guy I was totally comfortable with taking around the 100th pick last year, because you had, you know, you could look at and say, okay, I can get 20-10 and you know, an okay average from this guy. But now that he's pushed all the way up the board, like, are you going to be comfortable with a 23, like, are you going to be satisfied with a 23-10 and an OBP of, like, you know, 317 next year if you pay top 25 price? I don't think you're going to be. I think you're going to be like, oh, what a disaster. I should have taken somebody else. Because I just don't see how you get 326 OBP from them.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly something to be said for that. And with my devil's advocacy here, I guess I'm just wondering aloud when the hate could go too far. You know, we in our 30-team dynasty league, it was the launching board for us to lose an owner because his pick was ridiculed so poorly. So there's been so much smashing of the Javi Baez image that I've seen personally this offseason that I wonder if that's what the industry is going to do. And if they do so, I wonder when the hate turns him into a bargain. And I don't know exactly when that is. And obviously, it depends a little bit on how the draft would fall as well. As if, you know, I took a different middle infielder before I would even consider taking him. But I do think there is some potential upside here if you get if you can get him around pick 30, which is a far cry from, you know, where we've seen him go in the earliest drafts of this offseason. But if you can get him around 30, I see at least a reason to be optimistic that he has enough floor that I think he's safe. Well, when you say, you know, will you be happy with 23-10? The answer, of course, is no if you're taking him in the first round. But if his floor is 23-10 at a middle infield position like that, with some versatility in a lot of different leagues, as far as, you know, having played some third and played plenty of outfield in the past, then maybe there does become a point where he can become a value. But the early spin on Javi Baez from the industry is definitely very negative. I got some negative feedback when I had announced that I was likely to take Blake Snell at pick 22 in our 30-team dynasty draft. And he did go shortly thereafter. I took so much guff, I thought maybe for some reason I might be able to get him in the second round. So I swayed away from him, and I did not get him. But one of the things that I was saying is that I couldn't believe such a young pitcher was coming off a chance to win the Cy Young kind of season and a breakout wasn't going to be more coveted in a 30-team dynasty league. And then not only was he a Cy Young candidate, but he won the Cy Young. So where are you on Blake Snell, and do you think his draft stock is going to be too high, going as sort of a top six or seven-ish pitcher this year?
I like Blake Snell. I'm not certain. Like, a lot of it is going to come down to cost for me. I mean, I could see him as what, maybe, I think six or seven's okay. And I haven't really gotten into, you know, how I think I'm going to build a draft yet, but in Dynasty, I think a lot of people are just scared away from them. They just don't want to take young pitchers early because there's so much risk. Even though we've seen guys like this kind of pop up and go away in the past. But I mean, at the same time, you look at Snell, like, the Rays should be good again next year. It's still a tough division, though, although somewhat easier with, we expect the Blue Jays and the Orioles to be not fantastic next year. And, he's got the strikeouts. Lefties typically have a little bit easier time. And, the wins could be there again for him. So you can do a lot worse. I mean, that's probably the simplest way to say it. And, you know, he's still young, so there's still more room for growth.
Well, I think the earliest forms of off-season drafts, which include the three-sport draft that I was in, my cousin and I got in this big debate over Trevor Bauer or Aaron Nola. And a few picks later, I think actually a pitcher or two went off in between here. Someone took Blake Snell, and I remember thinking, well, why wouldn't we make the case for Blake Snell to be right there with Bauer and Nola? And there are some really, really good things in his profile. You know, the 11 Ks per nine is obviously phenomenal. And I think people have this idea that sort of, you know, they were sort of surprised at the amount of innings that he pitched last year. But, you know, he had 173 innings combined in 2017. And while he cut his walk rate down 25%, I don't think most people look at a 3.19 walk rate and think of a control artist either. And when he did have a rare blow up last year, he looked kind of like old Blake Snell, as far as, you know, just being a little inefficient, out there on the mound. He also, got a pretty strong upgrade in two of the stats that we like to look at and wonder if people can maintain. You know, his strand rate jumped a full 18% almost, and, opponents weren't getting very lucky with their BABIP, as that went down 36 points as well, from 277 allowed in 2017 to 241 last year. You know, and 21 wins does seem a little flukish on the Rays, although the Rays seem to be acting a little differently within the marketplace right now than they usually do. Sort of in Rays mode, going for it, if you will. And like you said, the AL East has taken a step back over a few years ago, for sure, with what we've seen as a decline in the Blue Jays and in the Orioles, of course, who are plummeting to the depths. I am sort of comfortable with Blake Snell as a top six starting pitcher, but I think there's going to be enough variance in his draft position, and some of the pitchers that are getting taken around him seem to have some very strong supporters, that if I think you get him around the ninth or the tenth pitcher, I'm pretty elated with that. You know, one more thing to say about potential negativity on him is that while his ERA was 1.89 last year, which is sterling by any measure, FIP did not like him as much. Neither did XFIP, had it closer to a 3 ERA. But I think if you get those strikeouts, I think you will be okay with somebody around a 3 ERA with 11 Ks per 9. He certainly will not sink your team from that aspect. All right, well, let's talk about the other whipping post. I'm afraid I'm going to hear you say a lot of the things you just said. I was fortunate enough to get Mondesi, Adalberto Mondesi. I got him outside of the top 250 picks last year in our three-sport league, and that was before he decided to show off a little power at the end of the season. And you want to talk about someone who skyrockets up the board. We've seen him go as early as in the top 30 picks in some of these early drafts now. So if you were going to throw an idea that Mondesi could conceivably be turning a corner here, do you see anything for that, or are you going to be much more similar to your take?
It's pretty similar to my take on Javi Baez. The idea of Mondesi going in the top 30 picks is sheer lunacy to me. Like, you're putting such a huge investment on a 75-game sample size. Like, I know the 32 steals seem like, okay, like, if we can quantify this, like, he could steal 60 or 70. And I mean, that's kind of the territory we were in with Trey Turner last year, except Turner had, you know, a larger expectation of, you know, this is who we think he is. I just see this as, like, Mondesi is, he's only 23, so there's room here to maybe see some growth in the skills, but, like, I just can't pay the price, and that's really what this comes down to for me. Is if you could get him, this is a guy I think you would say, okay, if you could get him outside the top 100, 100, it'd be worth taking the shot. But inside the top 30. Like, what are you buying here? Like, that's kind of what my question would be. Like, what do you think you are going to be getting from him next year?
Well, and that's certainly the trickiest question to answer here. As a 23-year-old middle infielder, I've been up on my soapbox for the last few years about how difficult I think it is to predict exactly what's going to happen with middle infield bats anyway. And I do think the fact that he's going to be second base and shortstop eligible in almost every format next year is helping bolster his status as well. I was kind of surprised that a guy who was seen as a batting average, just somebody who was just going to be a black hole in batting average, was sort of how he was viewed going into his, you know, miniature 75-game breakout last year. I was surprised that his BABIP was only 335 for him to hit 276. I do think if he figures out any way to hit 276, it would stun me if he doesn't steal at least 45 bases. And I think a lot of what we're seeing now is an overreaction to a dearth of stolen bases. I mean, if he were to steal 45 bases next year, on paper, you could say that he could lead all of Major League Baseball in steals next year with that total. And, of course, people can dream bigger when you see 32 stolen bases in 75 games this past season, and you're thinking of a Royals team that really has no reason to give him a red light.
The only reason I think the Royals could have anyone with a red light is that everyone is running all at the same time. As yeah. You may or may not have seen, it looks like the Royals are close to signing Billy Hamilton. So they're going to have, you know, Merrifield, Mondesi, Hamilton. They got Chris Owings, who could probably steal 20 in that for that team. Like, there could be a lot of steals on the Royals next year.
You know, and sort of the birth of the running Brewers was way back in the Ned Yost era. And so it certainly appears to be a team that is going to be pretty run happy. You know, the 306 OBP is obviously frightening for a guy who appears to be overachieving from expectation of what people thought his batting average was going to be. And, you know, the 3.8% walk rate is not going to, is certainly not going to instill a lot of confidence. But it's one of those really interesting floor guys. I think the biggest surprise in his profile was the 14 home runs in 75 games. Is certainly what shocked people. Although he did have 14 home runs between AAA and the big leagues in 2017, as well in only like 30 more games. So I think you're seeing people trying to check stolen bases off the list the best they can. I would not be comfortable with Mondesi anywhere inside of the top 60 picks. So maybe I'm a little bit more bullish on him than you are. But I certainly understand some of the skepticism. We've seen a number of these smaller sample size breakouts really turn on a dime over the last 8 to 10 years, really, going all the way back to Brett Lowry and the Brett Lowry days and the days when we thought that Eric Hosmer was going to be much more than he's turned out to be.
Yeah, the only other thing I'm going to add to Mondesi is in his success last year, he had a 12.5% infield fly ball rate. It was really high. And he hit 82.2% of every ball he hit was either pulled or up the middle. So he's also a player that his average just get killed by the shift as well.
Well, we live in an era where we dream about stolen bases just about, you know, and how many times over the last 2 years have we had this conversation where we say, well, you know, if he can just figure out a way to hit 265 or 270 and just get on base, he's going to help you in a category that is just so difficult to feel much certainty in these days. And some of it's funny that they're on the Billy Hamilton train. Just think about all the dreams that people had about Billy Hamilton as he was coming up. You know, people thinking, my gosh, he could steal 95 bases. Was like sort of a regular dream we were having. And, you know, he had his seasons in the 70s, but the bad hit tool is sort of what won out in the end for Billy Hamilton. I mean, you know, once you move him out of the top of the lineup, what do you have? Is sort of the concept. But also the concept is if the Royals have every reason to give an extended look to Mondesi, and if you get 32 stolen bases that he got last year in 75 games, if you figure out a way to get that in and of itself, that has a tremendous amount of value within the marketplace now. I think you yourself, Andrew, was the person that was trying to explain the difference between, you know, how hard it is for us to catch up on the concept of how much more valuable 30 stolen bases is than 30 home runs at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And I still sit on that side. It's just, I think of it this way, like you can grab Mondesi in the top 30 if you want to, or the top 50 if you want to. But you can still get those steals from, like, you're probably, like, we're probably going to see the plummet of Billy Hamilton this year in his draft stock. You're going to get a guy like Jonathan Villar for a lot cheaper, and you could get a very similar number of stolen bases in the end. I just think there's other steals to be had later in a draft. And if you want to get them early, you need to make sure you're getting them with out taking a significant loss somewhere else, right? So you need to make sure you're getting a stable batting average and you're going to get, you know, at least an average amount of home runs, which is why Trey Turner has first round value, but a guy like Mondesi and Baez don't necessarily have it because you shouldn't expect it because of how futile their underlying skills are.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the case. I think the real question mark here is if people really feel like like the power was a fluke last year. You know, and a lot of the power and a lot of the numbers come in September in a division that is obviously completely dreadful.
Yeah, and then it also came with on a 20% home run to fly ball rate, which doesn't look sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, there's reasons. There's plenty of reasons for pessimism. What do you think is, if you had to guess how many home runs Mondesi hits next year, what would be your guess?
15.
Okay. And if you had to guess how many stolen bases, what would be your guess?
I'll say 35. That seems high. Like, I think the real concern with Mondesi is that he could just have no playing time, that it could just evaporate because he can't make contact.
And I have him more as sort of a 48 to 52 kind of a floor for stolen bases. But like I have this incredible luxury that I got him where people like yourself think is a bargain in a draft already. And so I'm going to be unlikely to overinvest in it. Since I already have that luxury, if that makes any sense to you, you know, there's no reason.
You got him in a dart throw scenario, right?
Oh yeah. I got him, three or four rounds, after, shortstop and second base eligible, player for the Blue Jays, who had injuries at the end of last season. How good you know, I'm talking about. Yeah. Lourdes Gurriel. I got him after him. Which seems crazy now because I'm pretty sure you could get Lourdes Gurriel this year, probably at least 140 to 175 picks later.
Yeah, something like that.
All of that. So it is going to be interesting for me to watch. And I literally took him in a daily league, Mondesi, thinking that I would be able to plug him in with my other middle infielders' days off early in the week and hope to chisel out, you know, maybe get lucky and have him for 15 to 20 stolen bases, which is a far cry from picking him in the top 30 and hoping that he shows some more growth from what we saw at the end of last season, which sort of translates exactly what a crazy rise in people's perception that Adalberto Mondesi went through at the end of last year. So anyway, I do want to talk about one starting pitcher, and this is sort of one current eventsy type of thing to talk about. I want to talk about Nathan Eovaldi and how you feel about him and what you think the perception of him is going to be now that he landed back in the sweet spot that is the Boston Red Sox rotation.
Eovaldi's going to be an interesting guy, right? Like, we know with fastball, the Red Sox rode him pretty hard down the stretch last year. But you know, are the innings going to be there? Like, I think you're going to see him get, you know, I don't know what's realistic, probably 120 innings, you would think. Like, I can't imagine anyone's going to want to try to run. Like, he's already had two Tommy Johns. I don't think you can expect him to go out and pitch like greater than 150, but he'll be an interesting guy. Like, I think he's going to be a glob guy. And I guess I would, if you think you can get the innings out of him, he's probably a guy who you're going to get some value from, because you can probably pencil him in for 10 plus wins. He's going to strike enough guys out. And you know, roll the dice on it and see where it goes.
Well, I think perception in the public is that he's a strikeout pitcher, and in this day and age, I don't necessarily see that. You know, you're talking about a guy who was only at 8.19 Ks per nine last year, which is generally considered like a detriment. Like, people are considering that the weakness in Aaron Nola, for sure, that, you know, that he doesn't have this big double-digit K per nine, and Eovaldi's not that close to it. I think you make a really good point about people may have an expectation that because he'd signed this huge offseason deal that he's going to be, you know, that he was elevating his innings last year, and you're going to look at a guy who's going to get, you know, 165, 170 innings next year. That would also seem very unlikely to me. You know, and just the fact that he's was considered one of the key cogs in the starting pitching pool for free agency, and he's a guy who's coming off a 3.81 ERA. He was valuable last year, but he was not somebody that you build around. And I think you're right to point him out as a glob guy. I think just the perception of how much better he was last year when he got to Boston than people really thought he was going to be could have people having visions of grandeur that I don't really necessarily see. There's going to be guys that come with an equal amount of danger for different reasons in Eovaldi that I will like more than Eovaldi.
I mean, the player I'd probably ask the biggest question on is, like, when you think about glob guys, and I'll just use a Red Sox guy with this, is would you rather have Rick Porcello next year or Nate Eovaldi?
I've not been a Porcello guy. I thought you were going to go with sort of riskier. There's a huge difference between Porcello and most of the glob guys, to me. So, you know, in that Porcello is kind of that guy who has variables, has had variable seasons, but he's a guy that you're sort of portraying some safety to. And a lot of the glob guys are going to be sort of Nick Pavetta-style, you know, dart throws where we say, well, we've seen a chance for him to be great. I don't think Porcello can be great. I'm one of those guys. He was great once. I understand that. So I would much rather have Eovaldi, but that says that I'm probably not going to get Porcello anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the value to me of Porcello is that because he's on the Red Sox and because you know he's going to throw innings, the wins are just going to be there. So, like, it almost, like, he gets you kind of enough strikeouts. And without looking directly at the numbers, I would guess that he'll get you a similar number to Eovaldi. And you're right. Like, he's not a guy you're going to shoot the moon with. Like, you shouldn't draft him hoping to get, like, that Cy Young year again. I think he's a guy you should draft because you look at it and you go, I think I can get 14 wins from this guy, a 4 ERA, and, you know, he'll strike enough guys out that he's not going to hurt me. But, you know, that's okay value in the glove because you know you're not getting hurt in it.
You feel like Eovaldi then? You feel like Eovaldi is, like, in that top 35 range? Even that's a little aggressive.
I think that's a little aggressive, right? Like, you're not getting 150. Like, again, I don't think you're going to get 150 innings. So, you know, given that, like, what is your actual expectation of him? You know, like, you're right. He's not, like, he struck out 22% last year, which was good for an 8.1 K per nine, which isn't terrible by any means, but it's not like, I mean, a guy like Pivetta, or like, if you want to go back to the John Gray well, you know, is somebody that can, you know, really possibly spark, right? And I just don't, I just can't see that with him. I think you're also got a lot of risk in that arm with the past injuries that you could get almost nothing from him.
Well, I think it's largely been glossed over. I mean, people want to be as positive as they can be in free agency season to begin with. But it's been largely glossed over that Nathan Eovaldi has, you know, went from the Dodgers to the Marlins to the Yankees to the Rays. I mean, there's, you know, I think people are forgetting that he was largely considered Major League Baseball tumbleweed and someone who was just not going to live up to lofty expectations. He reminds me a bit of Joe Kelly, which of course is not something that anyone wants to really be told about. But, you know, when someone's MO is their fastball and their power guy or whatever, but it doesn't seem to really translate number wise to what you consider a power guy to be. That's largely what his career has been. And so I doubt that I'm someone who's going to land Nathan Eovaldi in a lot of scenarios, but I also think he's a guy who's going to get overdrafted in a pretty good portion of the leagues out there. I will not be surprised if I see people take him sort of inside the top 30, which seems kind of crazy to me in all actuality. But we'll know more about that when we get a bigger chunk of ADP data to look at, so we really know. Well, I just wanted to get back on here and get some content out there for you guys here leading up to you know, the blitzkrieg that we consider team previews that will be coming up here at the beginning of 2019. Andrew, thanks so much for your work and providing us with another opinion on these guys that really broke out last year. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can repeat themselves and see if their bargains are busts. As a generality, I think you're buying high on almost all of these guys right now. And I think that's generally a pretty dangerous maneuver to make in fantasy baseball. But then again, like you pointed out, of all these guys, I mean, Yelich seems to be the one who's in the best position and seems to have the highest floor. So maybe he will turn out to be a decent bargain, and I certainly hope that he does. Anyway, Andrew, one more time, give us your Twitter feed, and we'll get out of here.
Sure, you can find me at Andrew K. Dewhurst.
All right, and you can find me at Just Chucking It, and we will certainly, this reshuffling of staff, I believe we're going to try and work together again next year. Is that correct, Andrew?
That's the idea.
All right, well, let's keep it up, and I'll come up with some players here more at the top of the player pool for us to talk about here if we have some more off-season podcasts, which we will certainly try and do for you guys. So this has been an FWFB off-season MLB podcast. Thank you so much for the listen, and we will do what we can to talk back at you quite soon. Trying to get a handle on who we are.
found.